From the Land de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the third day of December 2021. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzla, GlobalComResearch.com, out of Atchison, Kansas. And we'll take up the weather forecast, too, that with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. We'll discuss the trade winds with him, El Nino. That's right, El Nino, La Nina, and we'll also look at the weather forecast in Russia. And we'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, I'm out of the office this afternoon, so we're joined early today, mid-morning, in fact, by Mike Zuzla, GlobalComResearch.com, out of Atchison, Kansas, to discuss a marketplace that, at the time we're talking, is higher, certainly in soybeans and corn. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Great to be with you, Todd. And this is good timing with President Biden talking live on TV right now about the price of energy and about moving more into the out of the SPR potentially, and China coming in and releasing potentially more oil from reserves. So good timing on when we're talking.
Well, let's take that up just for a bit. What's it doing in the marketplace? How do you see the macroeconomics?
Yeah, we're coming off the highs in the crude oil market. We're up still about 2%, and the natural gas is still up about 2.5%. And those two markets are going to be really important as we go through this next 30 to 90 days. And you know what I've told clients this week after seeing these two black swans come in, that are kind of unknown knowns, and I think there's three of them, including China, but you know, you've got another COVID variant, and you've got a major Fed policy change, and now you've got the Biden administration reacting to, I think, both of these things, trying to drill down prices in the retail market. And so I think this is the more the norm for the next 30 to 90 days. And with that in mind, I think crude, copper, and wheat are the big three price leaders right now. There are major canaries for the coal mine of commodities, investment, demand, perception in the analysis and how I measure them right now in terms of market sentiment.
All right. Well, I'll start with the outside markets just a bit, because natural gas and crude oil have been turning lower in anticipation, I guess, in part of the world getting together, I think that's the right word, on controlling the price more thoroughly for those particular products. Do you see much downside potential yet in each of those?
You know, not on that specific factor at this point, because that just tells the market we need to go more into the ground and find more oil if we're going to have to try and, you know, control the price. And, you know, economics books are filled with historical examples of how that doesn't work very long. And what it really tells the marketplace time and time again, Todd, is you just got to go into the ground and find that oil and bring it up new as a supply. I mean, we're talking about exhaustible supplies, but they're very labor and capital intensive exhaustible supplies in an environment where fossil fuels and you bring up natural gas. That's a key element to this, as you say, because there is some talk in the new potential bill that may be passed here in the next week or two or three, that there's actually some type of a tax on natural gas as the time period goes over the next 10 years. So not to get too deep in the weeds on that, but I think you're right on the money as far as these being key factors for the market and what the market sentiment is as far as meeting supply demand. I think more in the short term for me, it goes back to, okay, if you don't see the COVID outbreak and this new variant shut down a lot of economies, and you see travel not be negatively impacted for too long of a period, then we can get through this just like we have the Delta variant in the beginning of the outbreak of COVID back in 2020, in late 2019, early 2020. But if this continues to move in the direction that it has this week, where you have more and more countries locking down more severely, and all of a sudden airlines are talking about, you know, going out of business because they can't get the travel season booked, which is probably about a third of their business for their annual revenues at least. I think that's where you do have more downside in the energy potentially, and that's what's going to shrivel up commodity investment, and it's probably going to create an environment where the dollar goes higher and a more deflationary mindset takes hold for a time until we hear again about how the supply chain is not being met with the demand that we have.
You mentioned wheat as the other product you've been watching. This is a commodity you always watch as a leader for particularly corn. And while soybeans and corn are higher today, wheat at the time we're talking, again, mid-morning, was not.
Yes, exactly. And this is a great example of what we're talking about in the analysis. Thank you for bringing it up, because it's an issue where the stronger dollar and the stronger crude don't make it. That's not going to keep. That doesn't make sense in the market's mindsets for the commodity bull. And, you know, with corn and beans, Todd, I think you have a La Nina bull redeveloping from South America. And you've got the market mindset in all three, corn, beans, and wheat this week, is that you've been able to go down to prices and find demand, whether it's Middle Eastern wheat demand, especially Saudi Arabia and Turkey, and even Egypt at this point. We're finding more demand as prices go lower. We found some more demand from China on soybeans. And look at what the corn market has done. We've gone inverted in the December 21 corn, now premium to the March as we are in delivery of 21. That is a huge structural piece of the puzzle from an analysis of the corn. But to kind of jump back and what your initial question is that if we're going to have wheat rally and wheat be the leader in a canary, as I called it, we're going to need, I think, the hard red and the spring wheat to do the heavy lifting and be the long side of the markets. And maybe the short soft red wheat becomes the short side of the spreads, because the weather, the supply, and the demand, the protein demand, is in the really spring wheat market. Even the white wheat market out of the Pacific Northwest, but especially the hard red wheat market, as we broke here a record high going back to 1956 yesterday in Atchison and Kansas City, with the temperatures hitting levels that we haven't seen in 50 plus years.
Well, can you talk about the inversion just a bit in the marketplace for corn?
Yeah, you know, putting it very simply, is this is part of the idea that corn demand is going to remain more robust than the soybean or wheat demand, because the wheat price is high enough that it's a food grade, protein is being sought after. Australia is something to watch, because the wheat in Asia could be shipped out of Australia as a feed grain and compete with corn at some price. But by the same token, corn is relatively cheap compared to wheat and other feed grains. And so corn is kind of in pole position. And that structural change says to the end user, wants more corn right now and is not going to pay you for storing it into February, March for delivery back then. That's historically a very strong play. From a standpoint, demand is not being met with the supplies. We haven't seen this since August at this point.
After we finished up our conversation yesterday on Commodity Week, Ellie, one of the analysts made note that we had not talked about oats. The cash bid on the CME group is up 30 cents today. However, the deferred contract into March is 9 lower. I'm wondering if that tells you anything about the marketplace for oats and for corn.
Yeah, this is where I would probably say it's better to do the puts because of the basis of what you talked about in the oats. I could see the same thing or similar feature, you know, come around in the corn market for a time. And so I could see where the basis and the futures market goes up for a time for that demand to be met. And if you're worried about the downside, you know, just lock in a 10-cent March put that gets you a pretty nice floor. I think you can do that and probably get a floor around 540 at this point. And just sit back and say, okay, I don't have to worry about another COVID variant hurting me. I don't have to worry about the EPA coming out next week potentially and shutting me down on a new biofuel blending proposal and breaking the RIN markets, which then translates into hurting the corn markets. So I think floors and paper are probably better suited for allowing the cash market to do its job of getting more supply out of the hands of the farmers. And I'd put a major caveat on that, Todd, especially if we stay dry in the southern Brazil and Argentine Pampas regions going into January, February. This is where the first part of 2022 sure looks like the best part to hedge, because if the interest rates start going up because of Fed policy and we're pulling back bond buys, the outside markets, the inflationary pressures, the supply chain easing up in the second half of the calendar year, I think we got to lay for that and assume that. So get a lot of work done this first half of the year.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzalos with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We spoke with him earlier today because I'm out of the office this afternoon. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org. There you can find our Commodity Week program and the Closing Market Report. Our guests, by the way, for Commodity Week this week included Ellen Dearden of AgReview, Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net, and Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles. Commodity Week is our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. You can find it online now. If you can stay with us for the whole of the program today, you'll hear it on our home station and on many of these radio stations over the weekend. In today's agricultural news, inflation is the highest in more than 30 years, and Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says the problem is no longer transitory and could worsen with new COVID variant Omicron. American Farm Bureau economist Veronica Nye says producers and consumers are dealing with a lot of factors outside of their control.
Trucking rates, trucking availability, you look at increased wage rates and short supply lines. Where folks are having to wait for a long amount of time to fulfill orders, that all of that adds up.
So she says food is not getting any cheaper.
92% or so of what we're spending at the grocery store on food is related to costs outside of farm production.
Now, fuel prices at a seven-year high are a big part of that, also raising farming cost, something Renewable Fuels Association Chief Jeff Cooper argues the government can address.
The fastest and most efficient way to reduce gas prices for consumers is to allow more ethanol into the blend. And right now, we're sort of stuck at the 10% level.
But the EPA is again delaying annual biofuel blending requirements, leaving oil refiners and ethanol and corn and soybean producers with continued market and price uncertainty. On that renewable fuels note, United Airlines flew more than 100 passengers to Washington, D.C. this week on a plane with one engine running on 100% sustainable aviation fuel. The Boeing 737 MAX 8 used 500 gallons of sustainable aviation fuel in one engine and the same amount of conventional jet fuel in the other engine to further prove there are no operational differences between the two. Also, Federal Aviation Administration regulations limited the use of sustainable aviation fuel to 50% of the fuel on board. Now, sustainable aviation fuel is made with non-petroleum feedstocks such as biomass from plants, animal waste, fat, solid waste from homes such as paper and food scraps, and even used cooking oil, according to the oil industry. United recently agreed to purchase 1.5 billion gallons of sustainable aviation fuel from Alder Fuels, enough to fly more than 57 million passengers, and it's also an investor in a company called Fulcrum Bioenergy. And finally today, this item on the cost of fertilizer, a dramatic rise in fertilizer prices has been weighing heavily on U.S. crop farmers and input suppliers as they prepare for the 2022 planting season. Prices for nitrogen-based fertilizers, commonly used for corn production, have skyrocketed to all-time highs in recent months. Fertilizer price increases are driven by nitrogen production challenges, tight global supplies, rising natural gas cost, and steady demand. According to a new report from CoBank's Knowledge Exchange, fertilizer prices are expected to remain elevated for at least the next 6 months and throughout the 2022 spring agronomy season. The report also suggests that while U.S. soybean acres will rise nominally compared to 2021 because of higher fertilizer prices, the total volume of soybean acres will not exceed corn acres in 2022. U.S. crop farmers and farm supply cooperatives are facing operational anxiety heading into 2022, driven by those high fuel prices, shortages of agrochemicals due to COVID-related disruptions, and most importantly, the rise in fertilizer prices. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us for the day.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
It's been pretty darned warm in our part of the world. Can you tell me why that has happened?
Yeah, sure. So what's been going on here is the jet stream's been north. I mean, it's targeted British Columbia for the last week. In fact, get this, along the coast of British Columbia, we've measured over 19 inches of rainfall in some places. But if the jet stream's to the north of us and we got flow just generally out of the west, there's no reason to dip into the cold weather. So instead, we've gone up into the 50s, 60s. And boy, I was in Montana earlier this week. They had temperatures in the 70s with 70-mile-an-hour winds. So it's been a really strange start to the month of December. And it's also been one that's been relatively dry. In fact, November was a very dry month. And I'm looking forward to getting the new statistics that'll come out early next week on just how dry November was on the whole.
You gave us a quick preview into the first week of December, but can you talk about the whole of the month?
Yeah, so got some brand new data last night, and I've spent a lot of time looking over it, and this is what I'm starting to see. This La Nina is coming to a head. In other words, it's peaking as we normally expect it to do. And what that's going to do is that's going to shove those trade winds we talk so much about almost directly to the north of about Australia. Now, the consequence of that is we tend to get an extended and strong Pacific jet stream. So what's the translation in all of that? It's going to be active. I think the West Coast is where everything's going to start. We're going to see plenty of precipitation. It appears in the Northwest and at times even into California. Then on top of that, we could get a very active Ohio River Valley storm track, which is very typical of La Nina. What's helping it all along? The cold water in the Gulf of Alaska. You put all those things together, and this mild start to December, it's not going to last. I think we're going to start to see better chances of a much more active month after we get past the next 7 or 8 days or so.
You mentioned a couple of items that triggered a couple of questions in my mind, La Nina and the trade winds. Let's start with Australia.
Yeah, so the Australians have had a very wet November. And while overall this is good, it returns a lot of moisture to the soil, it was a bit untimely with respect to the way that they are working on their wheat crops. So some places there, you know, inch, 2-3 inches above average was problematic. So that's what happens when there's La Nina. Australia tends to be quite wet. But this La Nina, like I said, is peaking now. We expect it to start to trail off through winter and into next spring. And those Australians aren't too happy to hear someone like me start talking about emergence of El Nino about 6 to 9 months from now.
Shall we stay with La Nina and the Southern Hemisphere, but move to South America?
Yeah, so the precipitation pattern in South America is classic La Nina right now. What that is it's dry from like Mato Grosso do Sul through Paraná down to Rio Grande do Sul. It's dry in Paraguay, Uruguay, and Argentina through the next 10 days, at least the main growing areas in Argentina. There's longer-term concern that that same area will struggle throughout December to make good rains. And as a result, that could start to peel back the potential on the size of the crop from southern Brazil into Argentina. Northern Brazil and Brazil's eastern growing areas, so that's like Mato Grosso over toward the Tocantins, Minas Gerais, those areas, they're seeing more routine monsoonal rains at this point. So the risk is going to be south in Brazil.
And one final item, could you talk about the Black Sea region and winter wheat?
Yeah, so eastern Ukraine has been dry, western Ukraine has been dry, but eastern Ukraine into the Russian wheat belt has had better moisture this past fall, you know, what we had so far. The thing about it that I'm watching carefully are the temperatures. We have risk of being quite cold throughout Europe this winter, and I think that's going to play a major role going forward, not only with the crops, but also with the energy demand in that area. So I think we've got several places around the world to be watching that are going to affect our markets here in the U.S.
Hey, thank you much, Eric.
Yep, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible, joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. As always, it comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.